All right, Dylan, I am so excited to have you here. Welcome to Take It to the Max. You are Dylan Latour. You are the founder. You're the ghostwriter. Ink Press Digital. It is so good to have you here. We just did a very quick version of this over at Max Combos, but I really wanted to have you back because I feel like you have so much good information to share. Before we get into any of that, though, I got to know your background. Walk me through, how did you get started as a mortgage ghostwriter?
Yeah. So I started in the mortgage industry in 2019. I joined an operations team for a small lender out of Tampa. I did that for a couple of years. And then I got offered the chance to join a mortgage-backed securities due diligence firm. So I was able to do that, be closer to the Wall Street side of things, which was fun and interesting. And I did that for a couple of years until eventually I was yearning for something a little more creative. And I realized that writing online is, not only is it important, but really fundamental and very important, crucial rather, to running any kind of business nowadays. And I realized that in the mortgage industry, there's not a lot of high quality educational, mortgage focused content. So I wanted to help people provide that effectively.
Did you have a creative writing background, or is this just like a passion that you just are passionate about?
Yeah, that's funny. I've actually always wanted to be a writer. I got a creative writing degree in college. I double majored. But at the time I had the limiting belief of, you can't make money as a writer or the starving artist mentality. And so I kind of went in another direction. But it's always been a dream of mine. And so now I get to double back and live that dream, which is great.
That's amazing. What do you think is kind of the biggest challenge that MLOs or mortgage companies face when trying to come up with content to write?
Yeah, well, I think there's probably a couple answers to that. The first, I think, would be focusing on things like market rate updates and that sort of thing, which can, I think, become very dense, very jargon heavy, and
very boring. A lot of people follow them too much.
Yeah, exactly.
What it is.
Yeah, right. And so I think that's one issue. And then I think there's also a fear of niching down that a lot of people experience it, and they think, if I say that I do this one specific thing for this one specific type of person, then I'm going to lose all this opportunity, or people that don't fall into this niche aren't going to want to do their loans with me. And so I would say that is also a limiting belief, and that, the more niche you get, I think the stronger your business will be.
Oh, I completely agree. I actually was at an event and a realtor that I know came up to me. It was a social media marketing event that I had helped kind of spread the word about. Mm. She was like, "Hey, look, I have this very specific idea. I feel like it might be a little too niche to actually build the business off of, though. But I just did a transaction where I helped an elderly man who needed to sell his house, didn't know how to structure things, didn't know what to do about, getting a trust. His family didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to handle the sale of his estate. And so I just kind of combed through, but now I'm worried that that's such a niche area that I'm going to limit myself by putting that out there. And I was like, I could not disagree more. If you figured it out, if you cracked the code on that, you should be doubling down on that. So I'm completely with you on sometimes the more specific you can get, the more that that demographic actually opens up and finds you. So what do you do when you're beginning to work with a new client? How do you ensure that their voice aligns with the way that you write? What steps are you taking to ensure that they still feel like it's their cadence coming out?
Yeah. So I consider myself a co-writer, more of a co-writer and less of a ghostwriter, from the perspective of, you know, we'll do these almost like this podcast, we'll do these in-depth one-on-one interview style calls that I record. And effectively I put myself in the reader's shoes and I ask what I think, you know, the reader wants to hear, with regards to, you know, their perspectives on future, you know, where the future of the industry is going, the trends that are happening in the industry, that sort of thing. And then we record all of that. I take it away. And then I repurpose that recording into content. So based off of the conversation we had, the stories that the client told me, you know, extrapolating that and turning that into content. So a lot of the time that's lifting word for word sentences that they said verbally. And so that's one way to really ensure that the tone is correct. And then the other is, you know, I'm not ghost thinking, right? So I try to spend very little time speaking in those calls, you know, just so that I'm just listening, right? And I act as a mirror to reflect their thoughts, their feelings, you know, about the industry and whatnot. And so it really is just all about them and their experiences.
I love the term ghost thinking. What a great, I'm not ghost thinking. I'm not putting the ideas out there for you. I mean, would you do that though? If they, let's say that they're stuck and they just don't even know how to begin finding their own voice. I've got to imagine that there are some times where you do have to kind of ghost think for them.
Yeah. So, you know, I find that when you get in a conversation with somebody and you're just chatting, really a lot of what comes up is usable content. So mm-hmm. even if it's not, even if, you know, you're stuck from the perspective of, I don't know what to write. I like to think that I'm positioning my questions in a way that is really going to get your creative, you know, thoughts flowing. So that's one element, but I have seen that if people are really busy, you know, if you're running a big company, it's hard to always make time for the calls. And so, from that perspective, what I'll do is I'll repurpose any content that I can. And then maybe do some asynchronous stuff. So, you know, I'll read some articles, you know, from some high quality sources, and I'll distill that into what do we think about this sort of piece, send that over to the client. And then they can give me their notes on something that's started, right? So here's a framework for what I think we could say. And they can say, I agree with that. I don't agree with that. Let's tweak this. Let's make these edits, right? And so that way it's, you know, I based off of what I see happening in terms of the conversations in the industry, I know what is the hot topic at the moment, right? Because I spend a lot of time, you know, reading the latest news articles and consuming content, you know, on LinkedIn or writing content for other people on LinkedIn. So I know what the hot topics are. We can get their take on that. So from that perspective, that's how I overcome that hurdle.
I do really think that it helps for you to have that mortgage background, because let's be honest, jumping into the mortgage industry, it is like learning a new language. So being able to have your very specific background and your passion for this definitely feels like you've found the right calling for you. What do you think is, let me rephrase that. What type of content would you say people should focus on initially when trying to build themselves up on social media, trying to build up their brand? What do you think is a great starting place for that?
Yeah, so I think there's two pieces that are really home runs. And that's typically transformational stories, personal stories of where you started, where you're at now, right? That sort of like, I went from A to B. And that doesn't always have to be from the perspective of like, you know, 30 years, right? It's not like I started 30 years ago and now I'm doing this, right? It could be, I started a difficult conversation last week and it ended this way, right? So even over 30 minutes, you can extrapolate business lessons or you know, value from that sort of transformation. So the first piece is transformation posts, and then the second piece, client success stories. So if you're able to get somebody over the finish line, if they got denied at a big lender and you're a broker and you were able to jump in and help them, or you know, whatever it happens to be, if you can help your clients succeed, I would write about that as much as possible, because it allows other people to see themselves in that story. And then it's also social proof. So it's kind of a two in one. You're showing, hey, you know, I'm good at this and I know what I'm doing and I can help you too, right?
Are you seeing any particular trends right now? It feels like the first part of the year, so many people were posting about the decline in loan officers. What trends are you seeing right now within the mortgage industry that you're like, either that's a great one to touch on, or that's one that you would stay out of?
Oh, that's a good question. So I would say if you're a loan officer right now, I think it's easy to get wrapped up in writing about things that are happening from a regulatory perspective or, you know, in Washington. And it's very easy to turn into a bit of a, your content will turn into opinion posts really on what's happening outside of your control. And while that's, you know, I think there's a time and place for that, as a loan officer, if you're writing, to either to your referral partners and your B2B relationships, or you're writing to your directly to your clients. And in either of those positions, I think, you know, writing about things that are outside of your control are maybe not in the scope of what your content pillar should be.
I think you're right. And I know that's going to be a tough one because you're right. The opinion pieces, so many of us have, we've been in this world of wanting people to hear our voice, of being able to put our voice out there just like that. And we get the instant feedback on it, right? But it isn't always necessarily helping you. It's not helping your brand. It's not helping your customers to maybe better identify with you. In some cases, I guess maybe it could if you are vocalizing one way that you might feel about politics, right? But then you're also kind of alienating the other side that maybe doesn't agree with you. And not to say that they can't always look past that, but would you really rather potentially lose deals right now over stating your opinion on something? And I think that is that authenticity piece that so many people do grapple with of what do I put out there? What do I hold for myself? I'm definitely of the mindset, I would rather hold a lot more back just because I do believe in holding something sacred. And my opinion, if it's not going to bring people closer to me, what difference does it make anyway? It's just an opinion. I'm not a lawmaker. I can't change anything. All I can do is just kind of further a divide if I am putting things out there. So I think that is a very great thing to be mindful of. And again, not saying that you can't do it, just saying maybe tread with caution.
Yeah, 100%. I think a good way to think about it is, what's the point of my content, right? And what's the end goal? Ultimately, the end goal is going to be to provide value to people. Why do they follow you, right? It's going to be because you're in some way helping them, right? Whether it's providing tips on increasing your credit score, or whether it's helping them navigate, complicated situations, complicated mortgage situations, whatever it happens to be. Ultimately, people follow you because they believe that it will help them in some way. And so that's your number one goal with all the content, is to help your readers.
Do you have content pet peeves? Like, are there things that you see in people's content that it's like nails on a chalkboard for you? It just makes you crazy.
100%. Yeah. And it's just around formatting. So when we learned in school how to write in paragraphs, and that just doesn't apply online. And so when I see a block of text, that's a pet peeve for sure. Because sometimes the writing is really good, but it's just people aren't going to read it because, a lot of the time we're scrolling, right? 80% of LinkedIn users are accessing it through their phones. So, they're scrolling and they see a block of text, they're just going to scroll past, right? Because they don't want the cognitive load of trying to consume something dense or complicated. So formatting, just put a space between every single one of your lines. Don't write long sentences. Those would be my quick tips there.
Oh, I love that. I love that. What is a success story that you have of someone that you've worked with, or maybe companies that you've worked with that you kind of knew that you were on the right track, that you knew what you were providing was of real benefit to people?
That's a good question. So obviously I can't give away too much because I don't want to.
We'll keep it confidential.
Yeah. What I found really works very well is when somebody already has a message that intends to disrupt a space, and they just need the medium of someone to articulate that message in a really compelling way, those are the home runs. So oftentimes it's people doing things that are different. However that manifests, right? So if you're off the beaten path, if you're hyper niche, for example, something that, you're doing something a little different, and you just need to add fuel to the fire, high quality written content really can have a tremendous impact on your business.
That actually parlays perfectly into my next question of, how does someone know if they're ready to bring you on, if they're ready to really kind of light that fire under their messaging? What would you say is an area that they can identify to know that they're there?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, there's a lot of different ways to answer that. I think if you are in a position where you are when you land a client, and it's a high ticket client, it's one of those things where if you're aiming to land quote unquote whales, right, that will, that are effectively big ticket, I think that's when partnering with a ghostwriter really makes sense, from the perspective of, being able to shorten those long sales cycles, and really increase the number of touch points that somebody sees your content, your face, your ideas, so that by the time they get on a phone call with you, they're already sold, right? That's, I think that's really the ideal sweet spot. Yeah.
I love that. What advice would you have for someone who's looking to elevate the type of content that they're putting out there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Don't use ChatGPT ever. That's my rule. I think ChatGPT and large language models are great for ideation. Maybe if you're thinking through, okay, what are some good ideas, right? From the perspective of, you're stuck and you're not sure what you should write about. I think that's great from that perspective. But by definition, it's going to put out average output because it's trained on a large amount of data. And by definition, most of that data, most of the writing is average. And so what you're going to get is a lot of emojis, a lot of what it thinks LinkedIn is good for LinkedIn, but it's not. And so I would avoid using it at all costs. Yeah.
Interestingly, at that same social media event that I was at, they actually talked about how in SEO, Google for a while was rewarding you if it found ChatGPT related content on your pages, and now it's penalizing you if it finds it. So I think that goes to show the shift of people who were early adopters versus now that it's caught on and everyone is using it. I'll be the first to admit I can spot it instantly. Yeah. And as soon as I see it, I'm like, pass. No, I'm good. Like, I've already seen it three other times within the last week. I'm good. So I think you're right. Ideation, great for that. Actual execution, maybe not so much. Do you have resources that you recommend? Any books, podcasts, things that maybe people can utilize in trying to become a better writer, a more creative writer themselves?
Yeah, I keep this on my desk at all times.
Oh, I love this.
So it's a book called The Art and Business of Writing Online. And it's by Nicholas Cole. He's a fantastic creator, content creator. Effectively, that's my go-to for how to think about formatting writing online, how to think about what kind of content you should write. That was the starting point for me in a lot of ways. So that's what I recommend to anyone who is willing to pick up the book. I think it's like $20 on Amazon or something.
Yeah. Nothing makes me happier than knowing that we have so much knowledge at all of our fingertips in the form of books, and yet no one wants to read. So, more job security for you, because even though you gave away that tip, a lot of times it's just easier to be like, nah, Dylan, you've already read it. You've done the work. Let's put you to work. What is a misconception about ghostwriting that you would like to clear up, that you would like to clarify?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there's a big stigma around ghostwriting because people sometimes feel like, oh, that's not authentic, right? In some way, or I focus on co-writing instead of ghostwriting, because really at the end of the day, I You know, when we are running our businesses, we outsource so much of it, right? In a lot of ways, we're outsourcing our marketing, we're outsourcing our processing, our underwriting, whatever it happens to be. But for whatever reason, everyone thinks that they need to be their own writer, which doesn't always make sense, right? For your business. If you're busy running a business, it's hard to get those ideas out of your head and onto paper. And so, you know, you're just outsourcing the getting it onto paper piece, right? So breaking that stigma of it's somebody else writing for you. That's not true. You're writing together. It's a partnership. And, you know, you're coming up with the ideas and somebody is using the craft of writing to cement that.
That is a fantastic way to look at that. I love that because you're so right. I'm completely guilty of this myself. I can't tell you when I started traveling a lot more and had to hire house cleaners. Mm-hmm. It like broke me because it was that feeling of, well, wait a second, that is something that I can do. Why am I not just doing it? Right. Mm-hmm. And now it's been 6 years of having my house cleaners. They come every 2 weeks. I no longer have to worry about it. I can prioritize my time, my energy, my efforts, where it is most important for what I do for a living. And I can let other experts handle things. So I love that. I think sometimes just creating that connection in people's minds really is enough to get them to reevaluate and say, okay, you know what? Maybe I am closer than I am far. Yeah. I mentioned this in our next convos, but I want to be sure to touch on it now just because I do think you are 100% worth the follow on LinkedIn. Your return on investment for just following you is unreal. It is unreal. You are constantly posting tips and tricks and providing so much value to those who follow you. And I think that that is a really lovely and wonderful gift that you're just willing to do. And I hope that in return, people follow you. They see the type of work and the energy that you put into your own content. And maybe it provides that light bulb moment for them. But maybe it's time to put you to work for them. So thank you for providing such a value add. Speaking of that, we're about time to wrap up. Where can people find you? How can they get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach out to you?
Yeah, I am chronically on LinkedIn because, you know, that's what I do all day for work. So I'm on there for my own account. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Dylan Latour. And that's probably the best spot. I also have a Calendly link on my LinkedIn. So if you're ready to jump on a call, just go ahead, book some time. We'll chat.
I love that. Fantastic. One final note, just because I saw this on a recent LinkedIn post of yours. You are a dual citizen. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. French American.
Amazing. You grew up in France?
Moved to the US? Okay. I did. I was born and raised in France and I lived there until I was about 7 or 8 years old. And then I moved to the Middle East in Jordan. Because my father was with the French Air Force. And then he loved it so much there that he retired from the Air Force and we stayed there till I was 17. So, and then I moved to the US for the first time at 17.
Really?
Yeah. My mother's American and I've had family here my whole life. So I'd been here for summer breaks and stuff, but I'd never lived here until that point.
Oh my gosh, amazing. I can't believe that you don't have more of a French accent. You sound just as crisp as anyone else.
Thank you. Yeah, my mother is from Pennsylvania. And so, you know, I grew up, that's how I learned English was from someone from Pennsylvania. So I have her accent, I think.
I wouldn't quite go that far. I wouldn't quite go that far, but it is lovely. And I appreciate you so much for being here. Thank you again for sharing all the information that you share. I hope people reach out to you because I really do think the service that you offer is a fantastic way for people to take their business to the next level. And it's there for anyone. So thank you. Thank you again for that.
Thank you, LaDonna.
Of course. And this has been Take It to the Max.